Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, I'm out in my field again, clearing stones. Just to tell you, welcome to another episode of Rahala Summer. This one's got the amazing Jimmy Cricket. What a guy. You're going to love this one as well. We're on tour. This one's done at the Lowry in Salford. There's loads more gigs coming up, including another one in Manchester that's just been added in November, I think. Go to richherring.com/gigs. You can find out all about all the shows coming up. We've got one in Leicester. We've got one in Bristol that is sold out. We've got one in Richmond with very exciting guests, and we have got Winchester and Newcastle all coming up. Lots of these are selling incredibly well. Exeter's nearly sold out. Go to the website, buy your tickets now. Glasgow is worth booking ahead for as well, but please book if there is one near you and come and see this live. It's much more fun, and occasionally one gets cut out and you won't see it unless you come and see it live. So go to richherring.com/gigs, richherring.com/rahalastapa/tour, rahalastapa.co.uk, where you can also become a monthly badger and get all kinds of benefits, behind the scenes videos. You can see that uncensored Prince Andrew conversation. You can see a man trying to light a fart out of my bottom. All sorts of things that are only available to monthly badgers. But please keep watching these for free, and thank you very much for your support. See you later. Bye. Oh, I just remembered, we have got a new Kickstarter coming. Go to rahalastapa.co.uk/Kickstarter and you can find out all about the amazing Trump card game. Not that Donald Trump, like Trump's, you know, the old Trump's games. We've got cards coming out. We've got all sorts of stuff, T-shirts, incredible badges, lots of fun. So go and check that out. And we're hopefully going to pay for filming all of the tour if we can get enough money. So please support us if you can. If not, just enjoy these podcasts for free. Thanks very much for watching. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, don't worry. Nothing's going bad. It's welcome to the Lowry Theatre. There is no fire. Don't worry. Please welcome a man. He'll be on fire by the end of this show. Don't worry. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Oh, wow. We're in Salford. I don't believe it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming along. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lullabies Sung Tumultuously podcast. It's
new direction I'm taking with the podcast. We're just going to sing lullabies, get a guest on. We're going to sing very loudly different lullabies. See, you've got to kind of new. There's so many podcasts now. You've got to find the new. So, little baby, it's time to go to sleep now. Could catch on. But I was hanging out in Fat Jackets at the Lowry outlet. You've all eaten there. And what better tribute is there to L.S. Lowry than having a load of discount shops with a terrible car park named after it? And a lot of the people in there look like they could have been one of his paintings as well. And they call it Rahulastapas. So now that's going to catch on. I just got in. I've been doing this a little bit. I looked up to the Lowry outlet on TripAdvisor. I mean, I didn't think anyone would seriously review the Lowry outlet, but how wrong was I? The worst place to visit on Earth. I mean, that's unfair, isn't it? There is nothing there. Leaving was probably the best part. People are furious about the parking and the lack of machines. I hope no one's parked there tonight. You've got a 40-minute wait to get out. It's been going on since 2016, so I don't suppose it's got any better now. But usually when I come to a town, I look up the local papers just for a find a funny headline. It's impossible to do that with Salford. There's something whimsical. The funniest headline in that comes up in the Salford papers this week is Bomb Squad... sent in after military grade hand grenade found by police investigating reports of gunshots. That's Salford. That was the most whimsical item I could find. It's just reports of gunshots in that case, so that's not so bad. Of course, I'm staying at the Firchester Hotel tonight, which is just round the corner. I've been there before. It's very difficult to book. That one doesn't come up on TripAdvisor. There's some amazing puppets there. And if you're wondering, 100 Greengate is the tallest building in Salford, if you were wondering about that. You're wondering. So look, we're going to crack straight on. We've got a fantastic first guest for you. He is probably best known for his appearance on Emu's all-live Pink Windmill show. And I understand the live ones were the amazing ones. If there's anything like the Leeds gig I did a couple of weeks ago, the first guest is going to be really fucked up to such an extent that we're not going to be able to put out the podcast. I'm hoping that's going to happen again. Let's see. I didn't really speak to him backstage. He couldn't be off his nut. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome it's Jimmy Cricket! You sat on your microphone, Jimmy. Now you don't get paid anything. That's what you get.
I'm getting all the best ad libs if I do that. Yeah.
How are you doing, Jimmy?
I'm doing great, Richard, and I'm glad you've had me on the show because I want to explode a myth about my Wellingtons, actually.
Okay.
People do think L is for left and R is for right. They're really Brexit Wellingtons.
Okay.
You can finish the rest yourselves.
They're a very clever audience. Do you remember being on Rod Hull's Emu's Pink Windmill live Pink Windmill show?
Yeah. Rod was a tremendous performer. I mean, just what he used to do with that. But I had the same agent, you see.
Okay.
Basically, though, you're only allowed to have your arm so 8 minutes or something. So all the spots he would do live with other people jumping had to, because then he had to rest and things. But he was a terrific performer. Yeah. I loved him.
After all those years, he'd be able to do longer than 8 minutes. I think it was the muscle memories would build up.
Yeah. He actually invented the Royal Children's Variety Show.
Did he?
Yeah, because the main one, the grown-up one, obviously is going to this day. But for a while in the 80s, they used to have the children's acts that would, you know. And that was very exciting because I'd never met royalty before. Well, I'd only seen royalty on a postage stamp. So when I first saw the Queen, I licked this out of her face. No. It's just a little thrown out of
her. I'm imagining there might be some jokes in there. It's going to be unusual for this podcast. There may be some jokes. I did that backing up when the beeping was going, didn't I? That was good. That was a joke. You get one a year from me. Make the most of this while you can. So, I mean, there's so much to talk to you about. Why Jimmy Cricket? Why did you choose that? That's not your real name, is it, Jimmy?
No, my real name is Billy Cricket. My real name is Jimmy Mulgrew.
Yeah.
And when we did the clubs, when they were all round here in the 70s, the thing was to get a name that people would remember. You know, I saw that comedian last night. What was his name? So I thought, I plagiarised it, really, from the Walt Disney, everybody. Close the door, come here. And the minute I did it, I had a Disney spell. And now they can groan, you can groan, everybody, for that. And but I left, I didn't call myself Jiminy, it was Jimmy.
Yeah.
But obviously people mistake it for it.
Yeah. Says on Wikipedia not to be confused with Jiminy Cricket, has anyone actually ever confused with Jimmy? Come on, well, that's not a cartoon
character.
Cricket.
Yeah.
I want to, where's the...
I actually played Jiminy Cricket once.
Did you?
Yeah, with the Crankies up in Glasgow. Yeah, with Jimmy Cranky. She played Jeanette, real name, and she played Pinocchio.
Yeah.
And she had a little tube that would make her nose grow longer. Okay. And Ian, her husband, he played...
Uncle or brother.
Yeah. And I played Jiminy Cricket with a green tailcoat.
So there, you might be confused with Jiminy Cricket. So Wikipedia isn't as stupid as you thought. It's important that happens. But the costume didn't come immediately. Is that right, that you were doing it?
No, I had... the wellies came earlier, and then the trousers half-masked, but I wore a white jacket.
Yeah.
You always wanted to be original, around the clubs, and Bobby was doing the braces, and he had the long coat, so you didn't want to be... Because he was doing character comedy as well. Yeah. So it really... When I first did a talent competition on television, Search for Star, I wore the white jacket. So sometimes when you look at archive stuff, there's a white jacket. But when I did a program called The Good Old Days, which came from the City Varieties Leeds, and it was a nod to the Edwardian time, mm-hmm. and I did a spot on that, and they wanted you to wear a tailcoat. And so I wore it, and then I had an agent, a lovely manager, Phyllis Rance, who managed Rod, mm-hmm. and she rang, and she said, "Oh, let's buy that. You've got a bit of a costume now." And so, and we did, and the BBC said, "No, we hire it from a place called Nathan's and Berman's. You'll have to go to them." And we went with £60 for the first one.
Right.
Yeah. We've had a couple since then. I noticed the fire there.
Yeah.
But the only reason I mention is because a few weeks ago, I had an accident poking the fire. I forgot it was electric. And I rang up the fire brigade and I said, "My house is on fire." And he said, "How do I get there?" I said, "Well, you've got a fire engine, haven't you?" He said, "No, which house is it?" I said, "You can't miss it. It's the one on fire." I said, "I'll keep it going till you get here." It just all came back to me. You know, it's quite emotional, so.
Good. I had somewhere to go, but it's gone. It's fine.
It's just lovely to be with you and everything. What a full house.
I know, it's amazing.
Magical atmosphere here at the Lowry.
Can
we book you for the next show?
They're coming back next week as well. They're going to see next week's show as well. They love it so much. It's important to have that strong image, though, isn't it? But you started off in the... Well, you've done a few jobs. You started off in the summer camps. Is that the...
Butlins.
The Butlins, yeah.
Yeah, Butlins actually had the camps over here, Skegness and Minehead. But a lot of people don't know, they actually had one in Ireland. It was 26 miles outside Dublin, a place called Mosney, and the train actually, when you got on from Belfast, stopped outside the Pudding Range. So you could, it was literally, you could, the camp was at the station.
Right.
Yeah. And the only thing then, of course, was Richard. I was in Belfast, so, like, I had a very broad Belfast accent. And anybody, obviously, you know, from Ireland will know, when you go across the border, Dublin's quite a lilt. We sound a wee bit Scottish, actually, but they have a lilt. So I was really broad, so it was very hard, even for the other Irish people, to get right. Southern. So when I used to go really well was July, 2 weeks in July, when all the Northern Ireland people were on holiday.
Okay.
And my Richter scale went up on the laughter on that one. But of course you do younger jokes like, you know, my girlfriend said to me, "You remind me of the sea." I said, "You mean I'm rough and rugged?" She said, "No, you make me sick." Things like that. Yeah. And then there's more. And she took me home to meet her dad. He said, "Are you going to marry my daughter or else?" I said, "Well, bring in else. Let me have a look at her." Stuff you do, you know.
It's proper jokes. It's proper jokes. Don't get so bad. It's interesting. There's, you know, there's a few people doing. I mean, you remind me very much of Tim Vine. It's a very similar.
Well,
sort
Tim
of...
does one-liners. Yeah. Yeah, he's fabulous. He's keeping the old one-liner. Yeah, he's a great comic.
Yeah. Milton Jones, a bit more
Milton,
surreal, but Milton's
Milton.
Great.
Oh yeah, fabulous. One of Tim I love is he's a dark horse, Black Beauty. That's a rip-off. Velcro. I don't think, yeah. But Milton's got a great one where he walks up and down the stage and goes, AA, RAC, green flag, don't get me started. You know? We could do an act of the boys. But we're giving them the credit.
We are giving them, as long as you credit them.
We're not pinching their... Yeah.
We're sort of having a cake and eating it, which is good to see. Well, yeah, so you worked in a book. It was the bookies before the showbiz. You worked in the bookies.
Yeah, the betting shop. Yeah, it was what I worked in first. Richard, would you mind if I took my overcoat?
I don't mind at all. I hope you've got a shirt on underneath. That's all right. I thought it was just going to be the front. It's warm up here, isn't it? It's the sexual frisson. I thought it was going to be Milliken I had the sexual frisson with, but...
No, I'm wearing one glove because I heard the weather forecast. Well, he said today was going to be sunny, but on the other hand, it might be cold. And it's jokes like that are keeping me out of the big money, you know.
it's the preparation that you had to remember to come on with one glove on. That is.
Yeah, where were we? The betting shop.
Yeah, the betting shop.
And I remember once. A fellow rushed in very quick, and he said, "I've just backed a..." And the bookmaker said, "You backed a the favourite?" He said, No. "I've just backed a..." He said, "You backed a 5-1. He said, No. He said, "Right." The bookmaker said, "Here's £5. Go to the coffee bar next door, have a coffee, relax, and come back and tell me what you backed." So he comes up to me and he said, "I can't believe that bookmaker. He's just given me a fiver and I just backed a 5-ton lorry into his Rolls Royce." No, on a serious note, I underachieved a bit at school.
Yeah.
I think it was the teacher. You know, one day she said to me, Richard, she said, "Hi, you've spelt incorrectly. I said, "Isn't that what you wanted me?" She said, No. "No. I wanted you to spell incorrectly correctly, but I don't want you to spell correctly incorrectly. That would be incorrect as well." I said, "Let me get this straight. You don't want me to spell incorrectly incorrectly. You want me to spell incorrectly correctly. But you don't want me to spell correctly incorrectly. You want me to spell correctly correctly." She said, "Correct." Then I went home to my dad. Right, now he was an Oasis, my father, he was a character. Can I linger?
Yeah.
I said, "Dad, I'm no good at arithmetic." He said, "Don't worry, son, that makes 3 of us." And another day I said, "Dad, this is our, you know, stop me now with this routine, was, you know."
No, please carry on.
Right. It's fine. I can tell when you're...
when you get to Brian Blessed levels, we'll let you know.
No, I said, Dad, do all fairy tales start with once upon a time? He said, "No, son. Sometimes they start with whenever I'm elected." And then another day, I said, Dad, I can't find my red exercise book. He said, don't worry, son, you'll find it when you're not looking for it. So the next day I said, Dad, I still can't find my red exercise book. He said, I told you, you'll find it when you're not looking for it. So 2 days later, I said, Dad, I found my red exercise book. He said, don't tell me. You found it when you weren't looking for it. I said, no. I pretended not to look it, but I kept one eye open.
Good, well, that's the betting shop covered. You were the Huckabuck kid. Do the Huckabuck.
Yes, that was a dance, actually. Yeah. That was a dance over in... well, all through Ireland, there was a show band called the Royal Show Band. And they used to do this song called Do the Hucklebuck, Do the Hucklebuck, Diddle Diddle Diddle. And of course, I, always being a bit rubbery and things, I sort of joined in and I got to the final. They had a competition in Belfast. Yeah. They had another competition to do a PJ Proby lookalike.
Yeah.
And I won a fiver doing that. So, and I went home back to the coffee bar. This, you know, was the 60s, and we all had. Knickerbocker glories, you know. A lot of Knickerbocker, 6 or 7 out of a 5. It was lovely, you know.
Yeah. I wanted to have a Knickerbocker glory for so long, and I wasn't allowed to have one. I'd seen them on, because they were on the telly and you saw them, and then I had one and it was rubbish. it was built up so far, I had it and I didn't like it. It's just like tin fruit with ice. Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It looks so good, the Knickerbocker glory. You don't have them anymore, do you? Because they're shit, that's why. I saw you at the Slapstick Festival in Bristol doing your full show.
Yeah.
Fantastic. My favourite bit, because I'd been watching Tony Slattery just before, and then who's going to be a guest in the future.
He was lovely, yeah.
I was still in the room, because I was on the festival, I had to stay in the room. And before anyone came in, I heard you backstage just saying to no one in particular, I just hope I can live long enough to be as old as my jokes. That was before the show even started. I thought, this is going to be a good show. But what I like about your live act is there's some jokes that might be corny, but there's a lot of there's sort of a lot of postmodernism in there as well. You know, you're dissecting what you're doing. You keep on breaking off about the rule of three jokes and saying something's coming, or you say you're sort of narrating what's going on as well as doing your jokes, which is quite. Like a lot of modern comics do that.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, if you have something to say, like, I don't think we get the service these days, because I rang up Piccadilly Railway Station and I said, what time does the next train go to London? And he said, look it up online. I mean, how dangerous is that? You know? And then I went to the ticket office and I said, a return, please. He said, where to? I said, back here. I mean... Where else am I going to go? And he said, change at Stockport. I said, I want my change here.
So that's a good example of some of the corny ones. But it's a great, it's a really fantastic show. I know you're selling your DVD after the show. And
oh, well, it's funny you should mention that.
And online.
Right. And you can't buy them in the shops.
No.
I know, I've tried. I mean, again, it's the service.
Yeah.
I went in for 2 bottles of milk, I said to the fella in the shop. He said, we have none. I went back the next day. I said, 2 bottles of milk. He said, look, you, we don't sell milk. If you come in here again, I'm going to nail your foot to the floor. So I went back the next day. I said, have you got any nails? He said, no. I said, but 2 bottles of milk. So, and of course I...
We've got a heckler.
Mammy. I'll do it the left. Yeah, and just a quick plug. You don't mind if I...
I don't, no. Yeah, I'd love to.
No, I mean, if they cost 10... I sign them personally, and if you don't enjoy them, I've got my number there. Give me a ring. I'll come round to the house and do my act in the front room. You know? And if you buy them for a friend or birthday or Father's Day, Mother's Day. And
yeah.
Just have a look yourself before you wrap it up in the gift paper and you'll get 2 for the price of 1.
You've got a lot of unexpected talents in there as well. In the show I saw, you can juggle fantastically well. I know you've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
Play the saxophone, that was a surprise.
Yeah. Well, my next door neighbour loves me playing that.
Yeah.
I mean, one night he put a brick through the window so he could hear me better. So, you're very kind to me. I always think when people buy a ticket, you just give them a little few surprises.
Yeah.
You see. So, that's very nice of you.
No, it's genuinely a fantastic show. I can wholeheartedly recommend it. It was one of the, you know, everyone. It was lovely looking around the audience because everyone was just like beaming all the way through. It's a beautiful show. Someone's going to ask you about it, but it's gone.
My play that I've written.
Oh well, let's talk about that now. We're going to get on to that. But let's do all the plugs now. Then we can nip them all out together at the same time. I'm ready to, it's just an easy edit job. I like to think of the producer. You've written a play.
I've always loved double acts.
Yeah.
You know, and I was in a double act, actually, yeah, when I was a redcoat, back to those days.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I met a nice Jewish boy called Charles Elliott, and we were called Cohen and Kelly. And he said to me, we'll do a double act, Jimmy. The curtain will open, and I'll come out and tell a joke. Then the curtain will close, and the curtain will open again, and I'll play the trumpet. Then the curtain will close and the curtain will open and I'll sing a song. I said, wait a minute, Chaz, wait a minute. I thought this was a double act. He said, it is. I said, well, where do I come in? He said, well, somebody's got to open and close the curtain. I did Panto with the Chuckle Brothers,
yep.
You know, and I've always been fascinated about what happens. And I went to see Bobby Ball wrote a play called The Dressing Room. And I loved it, actually. And it gave me the inspiration. And I thought, what about an act? They do their sketches, but if we follow them back to the dressing room, you know, what's happening? And I made it that it's their very last night. It's their last night on Summer Seas and they end up here, but things haven't gone well, so it's their last night in show business. So there's a lot of emotion there and things. And the health and safety, man, there's a wind blowing in and the structural damage to the theatre is imminent. So there's this thing, the health and safety. Will he close the theatre? So we have this. So I suppose the next one round in the locality, we're playing Bridlington in July and then over in Port Sunlight. But I suppose the next one round here would be the Plaza Theatre in Stockport. Anybody from Stockport? I love that.
Very nice.
That's a lovely gig because that's so we'll be playing that in January. But it's all on the
website.
It's called
No More Fiffin and Faffin.
Yeah, the double act's called Joe Fiffin and Jerry Faffin. And because it's their last night, it's called No More Fiffin and Faffin. Oh.
And who plays the other member of the double act?
Well, he's a lovely fella. He's a local guy, although he's from Belfast like me. We're Belfast buddies, but he lives in Manchester. And he's a very good singer, Jonathan Young. And when the Bachelors, the 60s group, split, which some 60s groups are prone to do, you know, Con and Dak, the brothers, they went out on their own. And then the third member, John Stokes, wanted to reform the group. And he brought John, and John's got a lovely voice. But he's come through with the acting as well, Richard, and it sort of works the Belfast, because we're both from Northern Ireland. That was an extra bonus. Only play a little bit of that, but and John's been good. And then we have another actor, genuine actor, who plays the stage manager. So that's good fun. So
it's sort of, I mean, you know, it's amazing that you're still alive. I was when I saw you, I couldn't believe. But you're still out there working and doing treading the boards, but also to like write a play.
Yeah.
At this stage, you're still kind of enthused about the job.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Very much so. That's just beautiful. Look tonight.
Yeah.
You've got this wonderful audience, and you know, live work is just quite magical, isn't it?
Sure.
There's nothing like it, and well, you've done so well. You know, with your podcasts, and I know you're entrepreneurial as well as obviously
sure
a brilliant student. Well, because, you know, careers go up and down for all of us, but that's why the DVD people want to see Jimmy Cricket. They £10 and I'm there in the living room. Yeah, you know?
It's true.
But you know, the amazing thing about this, Chris, when I rang up a local theatre and put this on myself, right, I rang all my friends and said, it's going to cost you £10 to come and see me, but once the cameras are paid for, The rest of the money will go to the Spring Hill Hospice in Rochdale, because I live in Rochdale now. Thank you. Can I have a lift home? And when we got a full house and I was able to pay the cameras, and there was still £2,000 the next morning that I drove up and gave to the hospice as well. So if you can get the product, put it on yourself, give money to charity, and every single one, I suppose I put 10,000 and I've got 9,000 sold. So I'll probably do another one when I get to 10. But everyone has had, I've shook their hand or signed it, or if they've bought it on PayPal and website, I've sent them a personal letter. So, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like people really appreciate that. But it's, you know, and it's lovely to have that that connection with the people who like you. Yeah, that's good. I think you've got a big fan in the audience. I mean, I'm saying backstage you've got a long-running show with Matt Marriage. It might be over tonight. This could, unless that is May shouting out, which it could be.
Well, do you know, I had trouble with autograph hunters last night.
Yeah.
I couldn't find any.
But, like, so look, you've been working since the late 60s, mid-60s.
No, funny enough, I would have been red coat in the late 60s. I sort of started when I met my good lady at the... I was a red coat, but then I went into Pontins to be a blue coat, and that's where I met May. And her two sisters came over from Belfast to work in the Pontins in Middleton Towers, near Morecambe.
Okay.
Because the boat came over from Belfast to Hesham as well as Liverpool. And they could sing. Her and her sister Margaret were very good harmony. So when we left the camp, when the camp finished, all round here, I got them work before I got work, which is... So that would have been through the 70s. But it was a period when there was so much live work, Richard.
Yeah.
You know, any sort of older members of the audience will know that the Talk of the North was here in Eccles, the Golden Garter in Withenshaw. But every street corner had a social club, you know.
Yeah.
And there used to be great stories of the working men's clubs. You know, Brian, well, there was one in... I heard this story in Wigan, the Goose Green Labour Club. And this fella was... You know, the curtain was closed and he was sort of tuning his guitar. So the concert secretary ran around. He said, "What are you doing?" The fellow said, "Well, I'm just tuning up." He said, "You knew about this show 6 months ago." And I had a friend called Adrian Walsh, who's another brilliant comic, actually, from Northern Ireland, lives down in Somerset. And he was advertised once in a Workman's Club in South Wales, and it said, "Tonight's comedian, Adrian Walsh." And underneath it said, "He must be good. He's on VAT. And there's a lovely one about Tom O'Connor. He was playing a theatre in North Wales, and his agent got a call about half an hour before the show and said, "The magician hasn't turned up." So Tom's agent, Billy Ukescott, said, "Well, there's no magician on the show." "Oh, yes, there is. It's Tom O'Connor, special guests, the Treorchy Male Voice Choir, with the magic of Ivor Novello."
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
But this is a long career. You're still going, you're still happy performing. You're still out there, you know, doing the job. It's, and there's a lot of people from the 70s that are no longer doing the job for various reasons. The lucky ones are dead.
There, but for the grace of God.
But it's a difficult. I mean, Barry Cryer's going to be a guest in a few weeks in Henley.
Love him.
And, you know, I know you've worked with Barry. And it's he's again managed to have this long running career.
Yes.
Where, you know, I think a lot of the 70s comedians kind of hit a brick wall in the 80s when alternative comedy came along. And it was hard for them to go through that, the changes in taste. And you kind of traverse that. I mean, it was never anything offensive about your act anyway. It was always very, very, very clean act. And it wasn't, I suppose you could say it's a little bit of an Irish stereotype, but you are Irish, so it's okay. And it was never in a nasty way in any case.
No, it'd always be family.
Yeah.
You know, it'd always be like if I would say, Uncle Patrick, can I linger? I'll say to them, he turned up at the pub last night with the front door under his arm. And I said, Uncle, what are you doing with the front door under your arm? He said, I've lost my key. I said, well, what happens if you lose the door? He said, oh, I've left the window open. You see, so yeah. And then you'd go into a routine. Yeah. And that would be the particularly sort of offense. I sort of agree with you. You've got to circumnavigate and
but it's loving,
bring people on board.
It's loving the job, isn't it, to the extent? Because like some people become too successful and then to go and do something else. They don't want to be a comedian anymore. They try something else.
Well, they lose the hunger, you see, I suppose. And that's very important, isn't it?
Yeah.
To keep that wanting to do so well. So in a way, you don't want to be too successful because it would take away the... You just want a few more people coming in the odd night, things like that. The goal is realistic, isn't it? You know? Yeah.
But it is, as you say, and as we have both experienced, there are ups and your ups have been a lot higher than my ups, my downs have probably been lower than your downs. But it's I've carried on right in the middle, just cruising along,
which is lovely. Yeah.
But it's having that desire to carry on and that love of it. I suppose the thing I love about, and that you were in Bristol, you told me an amazing story is about the kind of the way that your career overlaps with previous generations.
Yes.
And so you get stories either from acts you've worked with or acts that you've worked with someone, and the connections are very, you know, seem like almost impossible, but because you were starting at a certain age, there were older comedians then who you worked with. Yeah. You told me a great story about some of the guys who'd worked with Lauren Hardy in Bristol about the ventriloquist.
Yes, that was, I did pantomime with Cilla Black, and and Harry Worth was on the show, on the panto. And I don't remember Harry. He used to open his, you know, with the glasses, you know. I proposed to my wife in a garage. I couldn't back out. Oh, you know. I put my key in the front door. I thought, what am I letting myself in for? You know, it was all very gentle. I just loved Harry, really. And he used to tell me stories. The recent movie about... Laurel and Hardy, Stan and Ollie, with Steve yes, Coogan, who I know is a friend of yours. And they did it so well. It was so sensitive. Yes, and it was about the time when their career in Hollywood had sort of gone, peaked. And they came over and did a tour of all the British music, the United Kingdom, they did all the theatres for Bernard Delphont and things. Mm-hmm. Well, on those shows, they always had a ventriloquist. And Harry was actually on the show.
Right.
And he used to say, he told me lovely, he said, they never, what's the word? Sometimes the people you look up to can shatter your illusion. But not with Stan and Ollie, they were just as nice off. And Stan used to watch Harry's act, because Harry did a bit of ventriloquism. And then afterwards he'd say, Harry, what if you held the dummy a little bit that way? And he used to talk about comedy and constructively. And he would always be writing, he'd get fan mail, you know, from children and things. And he had the Russian wife, who was played brilliantly, actually, the thing. And she said, Stanley, we're going out for the... Oh, I just want to write a little bit more to the little kitty who wrote me a letter. It was just lovely. Yeah. You know? And the other ventriloquist, of course, who worked with him was Ray Allen, Lord Charles, you know. And he told me a very important thing about Stan and Ollie. He said when they used to do the sketch where Babe Hardy was in the... hospital with his leg up on the bed, and Stan would come with the boiled eggs and then do the thing. He said they used to finish the show with that, but instead of the stage crew technicians taking the sketch down, They'd leave it up. So when they'd get up in the hotel, have their breakfast, they would come in at 10 o'clock and rehearse it.
Right.
It made it look so easy because they worked so hard at it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And that's, they were special. Marriage made in heaven, really. You know?
Yeah. It's a terrific film about them. It's really nice that when you hear things like that and you hear the colour behind those stories.
Yeah.
And I just always love that. I love the overlapping of the generations.
Being able to meet Harry. Yeah. Another great guy was Billy Dainty.
Yeah.
Who used to do this eccentric dance and who taught me that. And I was able, blessed to have met him. Yeah, those great guys, you know. Richard, as you say, I got a break in the early 80s and just Ben Warris, Julian Warris and things.
Right.
Ben Warris, when I did that same pantomime, the different one, I did two with Zilla. The other one had Billy Dean, but I did Ben Warris. He was a famous double act before Morecambe and Wise called Julian Warris. But by that time, Ben was winging it a bit, with a script. So I was meant to be Idle Jack. So halfway through rehearsals, they decided to change my name to Silly Jimmy.
Right.
Which threw a bit of a spanner in the works because Ben, the first time Ben saw me as the alderman, "Hello, Idle Silly Jimmy, how are you?" And there was a scene where we were meant to put the cargo on the ship and head off to Morocco. So once Ben said, "Right, get all the cargo on the ship, we're heading off to London, and then we're going straight off to Morocco," I thought, he would always save things when he had this chutzpah that if he did he would make amends, turn it into a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, you work with some amazing stars in Panto. John Inman, Sue Pollard.
Yeah.
The Honey Monster from the Sugar Puff stuff. How was the...
That was my big moment, really.
What was he like in real life, the Honey Monster? Was he...
No, he didn't disappoint me.
No. Was he up rehearsing every morning doing the...
I remember he charged me 30 quid, I remember, just for an autograph, and I thought, I've just been stung. And Honey Monster. I can take the groans as well as the laughs.
I'm going to ask you an emergency question or two, just because I should. Because these people are expecting them. I'm not going to go blue, though, Jimmy. Do you really want me to ask that to Jimmy Cricket? I don't think you do. Yeah. You know what you want me to ask, and I'm not going to ask him that. You're welcome just to turn these into puns on the subject. Would you prefer to have a hand made out of ham? They're idiots, these people. They eat this up. It's pathetic. Or an armpit that dispenses sun cream. You must have been asked this 1,000 times.
Can I phone a friend?
You've got a hand made out of ham, all right. Would you like to see, do you burn in the sun? I mean, you got that hat, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose I would do a little bit. Yeah, I'd have to watch that.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe the sun cream then. We are some backstage.
You're all in another joke, and I'm a.
It's all right.
Lovely, you
know. I just did it for them. It was all right.
All right.
This.
Got to look after your loyal fans.
This is. There's a few things. That's how we do. Oh, it's going so fast. Let's talk. I don't think I've ever had anyone on the podcast before. I'm pretty certain who is a papal knight. You have a papal knighthood.
Yeah,
are you aware of this? You seem to surprise. Here it is. The Pope asked me. He thought I was the most appropriate person. Papal knighthood. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it means you've got to champion good causes.
Yeah.
Fight for the underdog. And protect the Holy See from the grim forces of evil. But first, a song. No, it was quite surprising, really, because the parish priest turned up and made him a cup of tea, as you do, and I thought it was birthday. He had a thing under his arm, but it was... you need a champion for these things, and I didn't understand. There was a lovely couple in Liverpool who I did some charity shows for called Bill and Sue Lees, and then they just wrote to the Bishop of Salford here, and... The next thing, he turns up and he was there, he was having a cup of tea and he took out this package and it was in Latin. You know, my real name, James Jacobi for services, and it was Pope Francis signed. So you don't turn down everybody. I mean, he is, matter what religion or if you didn't, but he's special, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, well, know. No, so Mrs. Fantastic puts it on the wall now. So it's
And rightly so. It's an amazing achievement. It's and for your charity work and everything. But it's fantastic that you've done that. And your son is a. He's a Catholic
priest.
He's in
tonight, actually, yeah. Father Frank, and he's not far from here in Pendleton. I think he's in St. James's, actually. He's a parish priest. And if you're ever passing his church when he does a homily, the roars of laughter, you know, and that, no, he loves it here. He's also chaplain to the Salford University.
Okay.
And there's a couple of schools he goes to. But he loves it here. He loves all the people of Salford.
Has his life changed after Fleabag is the question I should maybe have asked him. When I saw him backstage. Maybe I'll ask him in the interval.
He's here. He'd be chatting to you. Look, he loves you all. Well, of course, my daughter does stand up.
Yeah, I know Katie.
Some of the audience will know our Katie from doing her act.
And she's a playwright as well.
Yeah.
A playwright as well.
Yeah, very, very proud of her,
Yeah, and two other kids. Four children.
Yeah, two of each. Two Catholics, two Protestants. I always remember once at the airport in Jersey, we were coming up the same way, they were all walking behind us like the Sound of Music. And Bernard was there, Bernard Manning, you know Bernard. He'd been doing a show and he was at the airport and he was giving me stick. Don't you go to sleep at night? You know, all the, have you never heard of Horlicks? And all, you know, he's, but that's Bernard. Well,
yeah, it's. let's talk about that because your kids were all on This Is Your Life, which was from the. Was it 87 or something like that you did?
Yeah, it was Eamon and Andrews.
Which is, it's always kind of, I've seen this a few times, because it's obviously, it was one of the last ones, was it the last one Eamon Andrews did, or one of the last ones he did, the last one that was shown before he died?
I think there was two before that, two after it, so two other recordings, but it was the last one he took ill, and he actually watched it in his hospital bed, would you believe it? It was very emotional.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wrote to his wife, Grania, and just said that it was just... Eamon, if any, was just a very warm, wonderful personality. I mean, if you ever watch YouTube, when he surprised Frank Carson, it's just the two accents, Frank from Belfast. Eamon go, tonight, Frank Carson, this is your life. Ah, Eamon, is it really me? And one of Frank's favourite jokes, I love him telling, was, I was at a bar and a fella shouts, Frank, lend us a tenner. I said, I can't hear you. He said, lend us a tenner. I said, I can't hear you. The barman said, I can hear him. He said, well, you lend him a tenner then.
And did you really not know it was coming? There was a kind of weird coincidence that happened on the This Is Your Life.
Yes. When Mae was singing with her sister and we all used to go round, nobody could drive. We hadn't drive then. We were all in our... Well, they were younger, 17, 18. I was in mid-20s, and we got these bangers that couldn't go. But Evelyn was the oldest sister, and she was the only one who could drive. So it broke down once on the way home from a gig, a Bedford van, and we tried to push it up the hill. And the police actually stopped, the police car. And the two policemen gave us a hand to push it up the hill. And then they waved to us and everything. I mean, that would never, with a computer, they would know there's no... It wasn't taxed. It wasn't insured. I mean, we should all have been locked up. But that was the era then, really, wasn't it? You know. And then Evelyn then, obviously, because I got married to May, and then May's sister, Margaret, married a school teacher, and they went to live in Leeds. So Evelyn, I suppose, you know... So she emigrated to Australia. Then you fast forward... 15 years later, and I come up down to London on the train, come up Oxford Circus to Oxford Street, and who do I see? It's Evelyn walking towards with her husband.
Right.
And she goes, shh, tell me I'm coming up to Rochdale in a couple of days. And I bought into that completely.
Right.
Really. In fact, and I went to see my agent who was in Regent Street, that lady, Phyllis Rance, managed Rod Hall, it's all knitting together. And she said, she went and rang them, and they were going to cancel the program because the surprise element is a big thing in that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that surprise. And they were, but I genuinely didn't know Richard. The next day, I had a book out, Letters from My Mammy, and I was meant to promote it on a building site. And as the car turned the corner, there was Eamon in the hard hat with Evelyn. Tonight, Jimmy Cricket, here we are. It was daytime, so, normally he would say it at night. So he'd said, "This is your sister Evelyn, who you met yesterday in Oxford Street." And then as they drove me by, the producer said, "Now we want you. Your wife still doesn't know Evelyn's coming, but apparently she thinks she's sick. So when Eamon gets to that point, you know, you're meant to say..." He'll say, "May your sister..." "Yeah, she can't come tonight. She's here." So she came through and they had all the crown. We got
it's
tears.
Great. Yeah. Oh, it's such a weird thing. It must be weird for you to look back at that. It's a lovely thing to have. It's obviously all your family members there and some of them who won't be with
they're
the
all over from Northern Ireland. Yeah. They drank the green room dry.
It's such a risky program, This Is Your Life, because your family's kind of okay because they're mainly showbiz, but, you know, you've got family members come on and you can't have to tell a story, and it's recorded as live, or was it going out live? Because they never seem to edit it, those shows.
Yes, it was recorded, yes, it was.
But you know, you often see these kind of terrible little stories. And, But it was a beautiful one, yours. But it's weird. It must be weird, you know, having that little time capsule of your family.
When they're all tiny. I mean, in Northern, when Belfast, where we all live, they still show it. A lot of the family that came over, cousins. It's like a holiday snapshot. It's exciting because they all say, "Oh, look, he's wearing that," because they were all younger then, weren't they? I had a school friend called Brendy O'Gorman. And he went up to Eamon and he gave him the camera. He said, "Eamon, could you take a photograph of Jimmy and me here?" You know? They were characters.
Lovely. And you worked with Eddie Braben as well, of course, on your TV show and radio shows as well.
Eddie was special. I remember the day I knocked the door and I had a briefcase and he said, "I see you've got your sandwiches with you." And it was lovely. He worked in radio and television. And I remember he moved out to North Wales. And I remember him ringing me once and he said, "Jimmy, I don't think the farmer next door trusts me." I said, "Why is that, Eddie?" He said, "Every evening before he goes in, he takes his field with him." Right? It's surreal, really, isn't it? And he had this radio show himself that he wrote and starred in called The Show with 10 Legs. Okay. Right? And a BBC executive rang and said, "Mr. Braben, you've got a show coming up now called The Show with 10 Legs." He said, "Yes. How many are in the show, may I ask?" And Eddie said, "Oh, there's six of us. Shouldn't that be The Show with 12 legs?" And then he said, quick as a flash, "No, two of us stand on one leg." He was just sort of a comedy genius. Well, obviously the Markham and Wises are embedded. You know, the great stuff that he wrote. I mean, Eric and Ernie carried it to another level, but a lot of it was Eddie's to, you know, give him the helping them. Because television, obviously, you need that support, don't you, really? Yeah. It's not like you can do your act to everybody, but you need that. And Eddie kept them going with some wonderful material. Sid and Dick, Sid Green, Dick did the early day. The boys were blessed and they had three great comedy writers, a twosome in their early days.
Yeah.
And then when Eric had his heart attack, then Eddie came in and did all the stuff for them now. So it was great stuff.
Yeah, no, wonderful. It was incredible. Nice, isn't it? So I wanted to ask you about the derivation. The costume came together and the catchphrases, did they just evolve as you
were
going?
Yeah, they came from the club, "Come here, there's more." And, you know, I went to the doctor and I said... I went to see the doctor last week. I said, "Doctor, last week, come here. I think my eyesight's failing." He said, "It's gone completely. This is the laundrette." And to keep their attention in the clubs, because they'd start drinking, because they weren't facing you like the audience tonight. They're obviously in a table. They're talking. So I'd say, "Oh, and there's more." I said, "Doctor, close the door. There's more. I've got a right toe on my left foot and a left toe on my right foot." He said, "You've got myxomatosis."
Every time I know where I'm going to go, then you do something like that, and I'm taking you on with.
I throw you a curve.
That's what I'm like. You emailed me yesterday just to ask about this, and in the email I said, "Dear Richard, come closer to the screen." It's very good. But once you've got something like that, I mean, that's in those days you were building up an act over years
all the
and years.
Time. And catch so,
that,
phrases, so that
once you had your break, which you know is still like 10 years. It was in the 1980 that the start, yeah, the search for start.
81, 82.
So you'd been over, 10 years out on the circuit or whatever, and you've built up that act.
Sure.
And so it's bulletproof, really, isn't it? And you've got those things that will just make people laugh, because they love you and they get it's just such a lovely thing to get those kind of catchphrases. You've got a few of them, really.
Yeah.
That all work.
Well, thank you. That's very, very kind of you. Yeah. Thank you.
It's all right, but it's the look and the catchphrases. It's part of
comedy.
But I don't know if it happens so much now. I don't know whether comedians now. Are the things that you miss from the old days of comedians? There's some things from the old days of comedians that are best left in the past, but there's some things from the. There's something from the. What I like when I saw people like Bruce Forsyth interviewed, they'd say they would never put on their suit in the dressing room. They would never sit down in their suit because they didn't want to crease their suit.
Yeah.
So everyone would wear suits and everyone would not wear them until they were just about to go on stage. Yeah. And that sort of thing doesn't really happen, even that kind of showbiz professionalism. But the things like that you think of that we've lost now, or are you happy that things have changed?
No, I like that. I think youth must have its fling, and I think if that's what, the younger people, that's great. I do miss that. You prodded me, and I might fall out with you over that, but I do. It's like with Ken Dodd. I was lucky enough to have him as a friend, and, he just would spur no. He would do, 4 or 5 hours, and he put all his make, everything, all his whole thing. When I reached the grand old age of 50, and I was in a restaurant with my family, and they'd arranged for him to come in, and he came through the door with a tickling stick in one hand and a pair of concrete Wellingtons on the other. And he prompted on, and 3 or 4 years ago, I had them pinched.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I got a lot of publicity out of it. In fact, Bertie... it's an ill wind. In fact, I wrote a little tiny poem.
Yeah.
Can I share it with you? A thief broke into my back garden. To be honest, the damage he did was minimal. But he stole my concrete Wellingtons. Police are looking for a hardened criminal. And there's more. A present from Ken Dodd with a tickling stick. And some pink champagne to drink. Unfortunately, I spilt the champagne and everybody was tickled pink. See, I'm getting into the emotion of it.
Yes.
How I'm going to miss those cement-clad water boots. I suppose they'll finish up in eBay, I guess. But if they ever were returned, it would turn my tears of regret into tears of happiness. I must actually, I was reading about Ronnie O'Sullivan yesterday, the great world snooker champion, and I, towards the end, he actually does a wonderful thing about, he was inspired, would you believe, by Ken. He said, as obviously he loved all the great sports people, Roger Federer, but he says, what I love about him was, he right up to the day he passed away, he was, entertaining, making people laugh, and Ronnie says this, he didn't have BBC or ITV telling them what to do, because Roddy's that sort of rebel as well, isn't he, with a snooker. And I rang Ken Dodd's wife, actually, yesterday, his widow, and she was very emotional when I told her and said, can you send me that cutting? So I have it ready to send to Ken's wife about what Roddy said. That's so, yeah.
Well, it was amazing. It was amazing. Do you think you'll be going on as long as Ken Dodd? Are you going to retire?
I wish. I should be so lucky. That would be lovely, yeah. What a great 90. I mean, yeah. I'll take that, It's fabulous, isn't it?
Do you want to go with your boots on? Your wellies
yes.
on?
Yeah, well, I definitely think, yeah. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah. I can. It's a good way to go, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is. I was going to... Briefly, I've got to wrap up quite soon, but I was going to, and you wrote very movingly about Barry Chuckle, who you worked with, who we lost last year.
Yeah, the boys were wonderful. I did pantomime up in Darlington, and Barry actually lived in Darlington. When you do pantomime, you're there for 10 weeks, aren't you? Mm-hmm. So Paul had a house outside Darlington, but Barry lived, and we were staying at the same hotel. Well, different, but inside. So when you're away from home, you're always looking for places to grub up. you know, and usually if it's McDonald's or it's you know, well. But we found this place that cooked home-cooked meals.
Okay.
And so we'd all meet, Barry and Anne, between houses, and the matinee in the evening show and have the steak and kidney pie. And just lovely memories, you know, of the boys.
I'd love to have seen you and Barry Chuckle sitting down eating steak and kidney pie. Imagine just going to that restaurant.
Yeah.
Seeing Jimmy Cricket and Barry Chuckle.
To you, to me, come here. Before
Well, look, we're going to have to wrap up. Did you want to do... one of my favourite things you've done, and a lot of comedians have said this to me, actually, is the letter from your mammy thing.
Well, I just happened to...
Do you have one?
Oh. Well, it's just a little one. She said, dear son, I hope you have a wonderful time with Richard and everybody at the Lowry. Your father's very worried about this Brexit. He thinks when we leave Brussels, he won't be able to get any more sprouts. We were at a party last night, son, and we all did the Brexit hokey-cokey. It was in, out, and we weren't too sure what to do after that. It was my birthday last week, and the whole family bought me a flat-screen television set. I don't like it. My ornaments keep slipping off the top. Your nephew Kieran has been arrested for picking blackberries. He was picking them at 2 o'clock in the morning in a shop that sold computers. He told the police he was acting on medical advice. The doctor told him to keep taking the tablets. Your cousin Eamon has split with his cross-eyed girlfriend. He said she's been seeing other men. And your Aunt Agatha has passed away at the ripe old age of 96. As you know, son, she never ever married, and she left instructions there were to be no male pallbearers at the funeral. She said they never took her out when she was alive. They weren't taking her out now. Your sister Mary has managed to quit smoking with the aid of patches. She puts one over each eye and she can't find her cigarettes. A man called and asked me what I thought of euthanasia. I told him they weren't much different than the youth in Ireland. I'm waiting to put the cat out, but he hasn't come in yet. I'm taking my false teeth back because they're too big. They won't fit in the glass by the side of the bed. You won't recognize the house when you come home. We've moved. Our new house is next to a golf course that has 900 holes. The man that looks after it has a wooden leg. It's a funny family next door. The girl is knock-kneed and the two boys are bow-legged. When they walk down the street with her in the middle, they spell OXO. Well, that's all the news for now, son. But before I go, I must tell you one more thing. Come closer to the letter. I went to visit your granddad's grave, and the headstone was a little bit tilted. I got a piece of wire, tied one end to the headstone and the other end to a tree. Since then, your granny's been, and she thinks he's had the telephone put in. Lots of happiness from your loving mummy.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Jimmy. I hope there's another 25 years in there. Hope there's more. There you have Jimmy Cricket. He'll be out there. Jimmy Cricket, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. Stick around till next week. We'll be back next week with some more. Thank you very much. How do you like them sky potatoes?
1st sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.